Welcome to the AAA NFT podcast, all about affordable NFTs, bringing you from 0 to 60 in the non-fungible token world without breaking the bank, with your hosts Andrew, aka Rantom, and George from Mostly Stable on Zedrun, who will help you navigate new projects, interview expert guests, and explore NFT trends. So whether you're on your first or 50th NFT, we're going to have something for you. And as a quick note, we are not, I repeat not, financial advisors, and nothing in this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Alrighty, disclaimer over, let's get to it. This week on the All About Affordable NFTs, we have got an episode about crypto art, kind of like, I'll call it the who's who in crypto art, because we throw around a lot of names, and we assume that everyone understands it, like, oh, of course, like fill in the blank. And I just remember trying to keep up with Andrew and the amount of names that he threw around. I was just like, this is impossible. So this will be helpful for new collectors who are maybe not as familiar with who the OGs in the space are. And, you know, irony accepted for the fact that this is a space that's only been around the oldest of the old since, like, we're talking 2015. Anyway, Andrew. Anything interesting going on in the news for you?
Man, what is going on? I'm excited to get to this topic just because it was something that got me into NFTs originally. And I guess something that I saw recently was one of my favorite artists gave away some of his, some editions of his new work that were somewhere immediately sold for 30, 25, and I think one was 35 ETH. So it was pretty cool to see that there were giveaways for this. These were giveaways by Xcopy, an artist we'll talk a little bit more about. But all of a sudden, just it was unannounced until there was something in Discord. And I don't know, I think there were six or seven of them given away. So a very different way of giving value back to holders than we've talked about in the past. But yeah, I think that it was exciting. And, you know, people were obviously, you know, rushing to get themselves into the raffles as they happened. And, I didn't win one, but it was exciting for those that did.
Oh, that is, I imagine you're pretty darn excited. It's better than winning a lot of different types of lotteries there. Random news for me. I've been putting out that expected value breeding theory a little bit in the Zed community. And last night I was like watching one of the videos that the community puts out, because the community is incredible with regard to how much content they put out. And I was in the middle of this YouTube video, and they pull up our site, 3A NFT, and they start showing the expected value breeding theory from us.
So, all right. Wow. Look at that. I'm glad they found that. Nice work, George. And glad that they found that.
We're on the map, Andrew. From the Keep Us Honest, I've been excited because CryptoBots continues to sort of creep up on that floor price from where we called it originally, but the floor price is around 0.111, you know, ish, as I'm calling it right now. But for the more rare editions, so like the edition zero, they're going at like 0.3 and above, which means the community values various generation levels and higher priced items are actually selling and being appreciated by the community. So that's exciting. All right. Should we move into today's?
I picked up a couple of those.
Yeah, you did. How many do you have now?
I think I have three at this point. I have one offer accepted recently. And yeah, I'm excited about those little guys. It seems like they've got something going on.
Yeah, and the Discord server came back to life, and we were both invited to that. So there are people talking.
Yeah, the developers have come back. You know, they've seen some signs of life. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see. And let's talk about the affordable project of this episode, the affordable project Botto. And this is an Andrew find, Botto. And full disclosure, I have Botto. It's both a NFT and a coin and a DAO. And I voted on something. I don't know what I'm doing with this one, Andrew. Can you explain what Botto is?
Perfect. Yeah. Botto is, let's see, I thought I mentioned this once before, but it may have just been in passing. This is an interesting project that just launched. It's a community-influenced AI artist that is going, there will be an one piece auctioned off each week that is produced by this artist. The artist is influenced by votes from the Botto token holders. Botto token holders, or anyone that holds this Botto token, can go in and you're presented with two different artworks that have been created by the artist. So then over the course of the week, the votes are tallied, and then a piece is chosen to be auctioned off on Super Rare. Now, the very first piece at this, when we're recording this, only one of these has been auctioned off. The very first piece sold for, I believe it was 72 ETH. Is that what it was, the final, George? Yeah. So 72 ETH. That's a lot of ETH. A lot more than I thought it was going to go for. And what's really interesting is that ETH is then used to then go buy back the Botto token and burn it. So there's that much less Botto out there, 72 ETH worth, than there was last week. And the same thing will happen every week with the proceeds of the auction. Now, presumably, you know, most of these will go for less than the very first piece, although can't say that that will always be the case. Don't know what will be output and, you know, how, what sort of attention this will get. I've got, like George said, I've got some Botto, he's got some Botto. They launched this with an airdrop to, I believe I totaled it at one point. I believe there were something like 20,000 eligible wallets. It was anyone that had held or minted any number of a lot of somewhat high quality projects, such as anything on Super Rare, if it was Punks or Meebits or Art Blocks. And there were, I think, three or four different levels that you could claim the tokens at. So they were targeting these people. A lot of them, I'm sure, have still not claimed, but anybody that had, that could claim these tokens, some I'm sure have sold. But if you do hold them, you can stake them to get voting points. You can also stake them just to stake ETH to the points to get more of the points. It's an interesting project. You can get in for, you know, any ETH amount, any low amount will get you some Botto tokens. There's no minimum to be in it, as far as I know.
Yeah, and I'd say it's kind of interesting because it's machine learning. It's obviously generated, but you feel like a little bit bought into it. I'm actually going through and voting on them right now, and it seems like the style kind of kisses off of a little Salvador Dali meets Picasso with the random like pop art thrown into the mix or graffiti art. And it, you know, it results in some interesting stuff, but it's fun because, you know, again, I feel like I'm participating in what the eventual piece will be. And, you know, there's it touches on a lot of things. So, you know, while it's not an individual artist, it's making many people the artist. That's kind of fun. Okay. The theme of the day, as we mentioned, is talking about the artists to know in the sort of current NFT landscape. Before we go there, I want to have you just tell us in your own words, what is the difference between a one of one and a collection?
Sure. So we've talked about a couple different categories of art pieces, and, you know, I differentiated a few categories of NFTs, one being collections that are often they're similar across the whole all of the works. You may have collections that are avatars and PFPs. We've talked about those a lot. We've also talked about generative art collections. Something like the Chromie Squiggle is a collection. They're all similar, just variations of the same project. Now, one of one art is completely unique. In some cases, it may actually not be one of one. It may be there may be 20 editions of the piece, but the difference is that these aren't 1,000 pieces that are all similar. It's a distinct piece that has been made by an artwork much more similar to the traditional art world, and that someone may just paint one piece of work, and then, you know, in some cases they may also make prints of this, artist prints, and it's not a matter of just generating more by the computer. It's actually, I mean, it may be in the case of prints, but it's still limiting it to a specific number that the artist controls, and the piece is created not necessarily from code. It could be from code. It could be some combination, but it's not just a matter of outputting an algorithm.
So to be clear, can a one of one still be sort of AI generated or use generative tactics?
Yeah, absolutely. The tactics to make the piece, like any piece of art, you know, it can take any number of different means to create it. It could be using some sort of, it could be using code, it could be using AI, it could just be using, someone could just be using Photoshop to make the piece. And there's so many different tools that I couldn't even begin to name that are used to create these things. But when I say one of, we're talking about one of one, but I think we should include these addition pieces that are made in a one of one manner, and that the artist is creating that piece, solely at that time, as opposed to the collection.
Gotcha. So let's roll into it and go through it. We, you have in the note, super rare, one of one, very high end, founded in 2018.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the platforms. There's a handful of platforms. You know, we've talked a lot about OpenSea, and with a lot of the artist platforms, the artists often launch on smaller, more specialized platforms. OpenSea tends to have a lot more of the collections. And I shouldn't say it tends to have them. Anything can be on OpenSea. Any of these super rare or known origin or any of the other pieces that we are talking about can be bought and sold on OpenSea. OpenSea is open to any contract on right now on the Ethereum network. They're adding more networks just to make that clear. But a lot of these artists will at least start by launching their projects on these other platforms. The reasons for that could be that, or in many cases, are that the platforms are curated. So there's a level of trust that's built when that artist launches on a high-end platform and launches to collectors that already know and use that platform. And whether they certainly don't just blindly trust that any of the artists are on there are worth collecting, but there's a much higher level of trust going into that, knowing that, you know, that the platform has done some work to make sure that this artist is worthy of being on there, you know, and not just by the quality of their output, but by what they've done to get there, that they've shown a valid portfolio of work, that, you know, someone that's shown up and pushed something out to maybe an OpenSea contract quickly and hoping to, whether it's trick someone or convince someone that they've, maybe made something distinct quickly. You know, these platforms, these other art platforms are doing that work and providing some security for buyers.
Yeah, to go down the list, you have Nifty Gateway. I bought some stuff off of there. And again, like you said, it's a curated list. It can't just be, hey, I started doing art yesterday. Here it is. Here's my image. You have to have established yourself and, you know, gotten by the powers that be. You've got another one here, Known Origin. These are mostly additions, some one of one, huge range of prices. Maker's Place, I've bought some stuff there in the past. And I've noted just like, they have a very weak secondary market actually for a lot of their things, unfortunately. So I actually like some of the art that I got there. That said, I have yet to see any one of their pieces really sort of take off in a meaningful way in the secondary market. Not to say like it won't eventually get there, but it makes me nervous. And I've sort of like slowed off of that platform. And then Foundation, what is this one? One of one, high end.
I would say it's similar to Maker's Place, another curated artist platform. And like you said, a lot of these platforms right now have weak secondary market marketplaces, and in many cases are relying on OpenSea or other open platforms like Rarible or something similar to provide that secondary marketplace. And that's kind of weak. You know, there's they provide a great primary marketplace, but that's really only part of it. You know, it shouldn't be just buyers. As a collector, you do have an expectation that there is a way to sell a piece, and it doesn't need to be immediately. You know, in most cases, if you're looking to sell right away, you probably shouldn't have bought, but there needs to be a way, a marketplace, and it should be active. And it doesn't seem like there's always a lot of effort being put into those from either the development or marketing side from these marketplaces. And I think it'll be something that will set the right marketplaces, the winners, apart. If you start seeing a stronger secondary marketplace, collectors will follow.
Look, I'll be honest. It's not a marketplace if it's one-sided. That's just called like an art auction room, right? Like you've walked into an art show and said like, I'll buy this thing and it's going to sit on my wall. I've got, you know, some delightful pieces of art on my wall here, but I've chosen to buy them, permanently put them on the wall. And it's fine if that is the upfront sort of contract. So, you know, marketplace.
Absolutely. You got to know what you're buying, and even how long you're buying it for and how liquid it is. And I would say, generally speaking, art pieces that aren't a part of a collection are going to be less liquid than pieces that are part of a collection. There aren't.
Can you say that again? Pieces that are.
I would say that these art pieces are generally not as liquid as pieces that are part of maybe a 10,000 piece collection. There aren't a huge number of buyers, holders, collectors actively looking to buy and or sell at any given time. In many cases, you know, it may be a few dozen or a few hundred people that really go after this person's artwork, and they may not, you know, always be aware if there is a piece for sale. They may not always be looking to pick another piece up. And in many cases, it's much more of a long-term investment or collection.
I think that's a huge point. And one of the things that makes me the most like sort of nervous these days about getting in on one-on-ones, because I just don't think I'm smart enough to figure out which pieces are. And frankly, the market has already figured out some of these top crypto artists that we're about to go through. They've figured them out and priced them pretty tightly. And it's above my affordable, all about affordable NFT price range.
Absolutely. I think we can get into this list, and a lot of these are definitely not affordable. There are, there are pieces out there for some of them that are still affordable to get into. Yeah. But by and large, the one of ones are generally out of an affordable price range.
Yeah. But one of ones versus editions. So what is the difference there? Because sometimes the editions can be affordable versus one of ones. What is the difference?
Right, there? Right. So again, trying to explain that. So a one of one is truly you own the token, the only token that has that piece. Now, in many cases, there may be 20 of the exact same piece that were made. And, in some cases, there could be even more. And you can think of these more like artist prints, I think, in that they aren't as rare and generally aren't as valuable as a one of one, but they're still quite limited compared to a massive run of 10,000 pieces. Now there are editions that maybe have 600 pieces. There are editions that have thousands of pieces. I know on Nifty Gateway, especially, they had, I don't know if they're still doing it as much, but they had open minting, or I think that's the term, where basically as many people as wanted a piece during a specific time window could mint and come out with the same edition or the same artwork. So those are editions versus a truly unique one-of-one asset where you own the only token of that particular piece.
Yeah, and I think that's helpful. What's interesting is those are all then sort of priced together, but still can, for whatever reason, vary in price. And that kind of confuses me sometimes, but there's no rarity. There's no sort of attributes. They're like, they all have the same.
Right, right. Very different than PFP projects and even generative art projects that we've talked about before.
All right. I'm tempted for the crypto artist to like make you go through this, like Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire, but that would probably defeat the purpose. So
I've listed a few here, quite a few here, but there's obviously just a huge list that you could go through if you really want to delve into crypto artists. I've listed some here that I wanted to discuss that I think are worth discussing. So Matt Fury is the first Rare Pepes. So he made Rare Pepes, which were one of the first NFTs. And it was actually on a Bitcoin-based network that now they're sort of, I don't know exactly how, but they're, you can own these on Ethereum now. But he's important because he was such an early artist that was doing this. Some of the Rare Pepes are now quite expensive, especially pieces by him. And I know there's been some, the Pepe character has been sort of taken to a negative place, and he is doing some work to try to bring that back positively, because that was never the intention he had behind it. So you'd recognize the character if you do see it. Next on the list I've got here is Robbie Barrett, goes by the username Videodrome on Super Rare. And I've listed him here because he gave away pieces at a Sotheby's auction. And I believe that was I don't have the year here, but I believe it was back in 2018. These pieces were given away to attendees of this auction. And you know, at the time they were not very highly valued by the people who received them. Many people sort of laughed at them and discarded them. And now they sell for, if you find one for 100 ETH, it will be scooped up pretty quickly. I remember seeing some offers being accepted for them earlier this year for 60, and people were amazed that they were going for just that much. But part of it is the story behind these pieces, in that they were given away, and now very few exist. Many are probably lost forever. But he was the artist behind that. And interestingly, he has spoken out and is somewhat disappointed by the fact that so much attention is just given to the value of the piece versus the pieces themselves. And they are worth a lot, worth looking at a lot, in the sense that they use artificial intelligence to create the pieces. And it's definitely an overlooked aspect of the piece itself compared to the value at this point.
Right. And Beeple, I'm familiar with this one.
So Beeple, yeah, this is one that I think most people who are in NFTs have probably heard of Beeple. He's definitely made some mainstream news, has the largest NFT sale ever. I believe it was 69 million.
Yeah, leave it to the crypto community for the joke.
Right. It's as my wife says, it's as if it's a bunch of 16-year-old boys, and in some cases, it may actually be that.
Yeah, wow, that's so much. But he had been, I think, he had been working on it for, like, it was the number of days project that he did. And it was, you know, it was a lot of work went into it. He'd been at it for a while.
Yeah, I think it was 10,000 days that he'd been producing it. Does that sound right? Anyways, he'd been producing a piece every day. He only mints a small number of them. Many would say he's not necessarily crypto native in the pieces.
The first 5,000 days, you were close. The first 5,000 days.
By 5,000, there we go. Yeah, that sounds more more possible. Yeah. But yeah, he's not always considered crypto native, in that the pieces don't necessarily have to live on the blockchain, and many of them don't. He doesn't mint a lot of the pieces, but it is he's extremely influential and has brought a huge number of people into the space as collectors.
Ooh, next, Xcopy. This comes up a lot.
So this is one that I mentioned earlier. It's one of my favorite artists, a very early crypto artist, has done almost no art outside of crypto art. And has a very distinct style that generally uses a flashing animation style with a lot of focus on the theme of death often comes up, but also kind of the ways that the internet and NFT culture comes up a lot, and sort of the making fun of the whole space itself. One of his most expensive and famous pieces is titled Right Click and Save As. There's another one titled This Is Clearly Money Laundering. Others are NGMI, as in not going to make it. It's a common phrase in NFTs, but the style is very distinct. The one-of-one pieces now are worth hundreds of ETH, if not over the 1,000. So very hard to get, but there are edition pieces out there that are somewhat in the affordable range, although those are quickly getting to be unaffordable as well. And like I said, this was the one, the artist that gave away some pieces the other day that quickly went for 30 ETH. That's an extremely high amount for an edition piece. That was an edition of 30. So generally speaking, that's higher than even than many of these artists' one-of-one pieces. Maybe not the ones that we've mentioned so far, but some further down on the list, you can still find one-of-ones for less than X copy edition pieces.
And am I correct to say that his sort of genre, if you could categorize it, is one of a glitch artist?
Yeah, definitely. Common in most works, almost all of them are animated and have a glitchness to them. Yeah.
Yeah. Like introduce seizure warning first before looking at them, but it's a unique style. And one of those things that I think anyone who's like writing off NFT artists should really understand that there are sort of themes that we move through in the same way that classic art moved through impressionist eras, modern art. And it's interesting to see, you know, like it or not, there's a theme, there's a bunch of artists that worked around it, and Xcopy is certainly the leader there. Hakatau.
Yeah, I'm glad you went for how to say that one. That's how I say it in my head, but I'm never quite sure. And I'm not entirely sure what Hakatau is, if it's a person, a team. Believe it's an Italian artist or artists. Very distinct collage-esque style, often in black and white. Has done some, done a lot of early art in the space as well, but pieces with Decentraland, one of the metaverse platforms that we've discussed before, has done some stuff to launch with them, and a number of other platforms has been a part of their launches to add art pieces to it. So very distinct. There's a lot of pieces. I think that's Hakatau also has pieces on Nifty, Super Rare, Known Origin. Like many of these artists, they seem to get around to a number of platforms.
Gotcha. Next up, Sarah Zucker.
Yeah, Sarah Zucker. So this is another early artist that works with a lot of like old technologies. It's one that's a style that I've seen a lot in crypto art, and people using like old VCRs and other old video equipment that adds natural, I don't know if I'd call them glitches, but it distorts the images in ways that are relatively unpredictable. And I think it's a very distinct style, and she's been very early in playing around with these pieces, and has had some of her work auctioned. I can't remember if it was Sotheby's or what's the other one, George? Why am I?
Christie's?
Christie's was one of those auctions, and is very influential in space, very distinct style.
Yeah, and probably really up there is one of the most known women in the field that actually is fairly male dominated. So,
absolutely. Yeah, that's awesome. That's definitely important. And there aren't enough. Tried to include a few on this list that I think are influential beyond just that reason. And then she is definitely influential for the video techniques.
And Coldy.
Coldy is another one of my favorite artists, early crypto artists. Most of his work is crypto art, although he does have more of a traditional art background, studied art at Pomona College, I believe it was, but was big in, he was really big in fighting for artist royalties as a standard in contracts. And we've talked about this a little bit before, but what that means is that when most of these pieces get traded, there's something built into the contract that will pay a royalty out to the original artist, the original creator of the piece. So let's say if I bought a piece off the from the artist and then sold it to George, maybe 10% of that sale would go back to the artist. So it's a way that the artist can get paid in the four pieces much later on in their work, but it also helps with young artists that maybe sell pieces for a very low value and then have the piece appreciate enormously later. Typically, the value would only go to the collector, whereas the royalty system will allow the artist to get some of that value that does occur later on after that piece is sold and the value of their pieces has appreciated enormously. I think that's really cool that he's fought for that. He has a lot of his theme. He's from Northern California, and a lot of his work has a theme of mining to it, which is both meaningful to where he's from in the foothills of the Sierra, and also has a lot of meaning in crypto and the idea of mining for Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever coins may be out there. But he has a very good understanding of the space as a whole and what has been influential in getting people to come into crypto.
Yeah, he seems to say he's a stereoscopic image-based art. And it's unique. It has a style.
He's doing a lot of 3D stuff. He's been talking about how he's going to do more and more 3D. He's also, I was excited. He's has just recently done a talk on how NFTs and crypto can help sort of get into some more nonprofit sectors. So he's definitely looking at how the NFT space can evolve to be more than what it is right now. And it seems to be looking ahead in most cases.
Okay. Is this Miss AI Simpson?
I think it's Al. Miss Al Simpson. It's a good question. That's how I've always said it anyway, but I think it's AL, but it's a good question now that you said that. Early female crypto artist, and another one on the list that was, in a very male-dominated industry. She's been a pretty prolific artist on Super Rare. Has over 300 pieces produced on Super Rare. One of the highest.
Yeah, it's pieces. AL. It's Anna Louise Simpson.
There we go. Oh, thank you. All right. So her pieces. They have somewhat of a glitchy style to them too, but they have also I don't know exactly how to describe it, but I'd say somewhat of a pop art style to them. Many of them with a theme of powerful women, I guess I would say. I think I don't know. Her pieces really stick out to me in that they all have a very distinct style. It's almost like a collection in that they are all so similar in a way, but they have a very similar style, but they're obviously distinct pieces. Definitely worth checking out. In a lot of very strong collector's hands, they are hard to get, but I think she did a piece on Nifty boxes recently. There was an addition, and those are still affordable.
Yeah, she is like a combination of pop art, little Jackson Pollock, mixed media. It's fun to look at, actually. Like going through, like arguably, it's fun to just sort of browse. We're gonna have all of these links in the show notes, by the way. We encourage you to just browse around and just see some of these and just appreciate the art and don't get caught up in the ETH, but also you can't afford any of these. Sorry.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, especially the the one-of-ones, the low editions. Let's see, this next one on the list, I believe you have a piece from this artist, Trevor Jones. Is that right, George?
Yeah, the Bitcoin Angel, Trevor Jones, an artist who actually had that edition of the Bitcoin Angel earlier this year. And I was attracted to it because it was the first time that I had at least seen somebody really tying the art to potential other real world interactions. And what happened was the Bitcoin Angel, originally dropped for $777. And then he said, when Bitcoin hits, that amount, like the 77.7 number, that he
was 77,000, right?
Sorry, 77,000. Yeah. 77,000, all sevens. Once Bitcoin passes that number, it's currently trading, it bumps up around 60,000 right now. And depending on when you listen to it, up and down, but essentially when it hits that number, he's going to trigger a bunch of auctions and give away extra art to people that have those in their wallet. And I was like, oh, well, that's kind of like clever and interesting. So I thought that was interesting. And then the actual work is more of a classic painting, I'd say. Style,
yeah,
and on canvas, and then transferred over.
Before this, he was already, fairly well known in on that Nifty platform, I believe, and in crypto art. But this piece has definitely brought a lot of attention, and by tying him to that price, I think it will only increase as that price eventually, I think eventually, creeps up to $77,777.
Full disclosure, I plan to sell perfectly at 77777776. Right at that moment, that's when I'll sell, and I'll hang on to another one.
All right, last that I have on this list of 10, it's certainly not a definitive list, but Osinachi is a Nigerian artist, and a lot of his works plays with themes of race. It's got a lot of pieces were on Rarible very early on, has a lot of pieces on Super Rare as well. Another interesting thing that he does is he's got a social token called Osina, his own token, and he's experimented with airdropping it to people during a Sotheby's auction recently. And you didn't have to be there to do this. You could take a picture of yourself in front of your computer watching the live cast of the Sotheby's auction, and I'm sure he had it posted on Twitter or somewhere, and then he would airdrop the tokens to you, which could be then used to redeem for other pieces of his work, and those pieces were only available in the token. So a pretty cool way to reward collectors that certainly couldn't participate in the auction, but still were fans of his, and reward those people with a piece that was only available because they showed up and were willing to pay attention, even though they weren't bidding on the piece. I have one of his pieces. He's another one of my favorite artists, and they are really bold styles, bright colors for the most part. Not all the pieces he's done, some that are very dark in color as well. Like I said, a lot do play with themes of race. Definitely, another one worth checking out. And like I said, this list is a very small sample, a good intro. I think there are dozens, hundreds worth checking out there. Most of these are relatively expensive, especially the low edition pieces, but there are still some things out there. If you look on some things like Nifty Boxes or even Nifty Gateway for edition pieces that maybe, maybe there were a few too many printed, or it seems like it at this time, but at some point that can change. There was a time not long ago when I saw X copies edition pieces selling for under half an ETH. And I think those are now going for six or seven. So yeah, things can change quickly.
Yeah, it's an interesting note, and it's hard to build a list like this. I saw some names. I was like, I would add this, but we'd be here all day. I think this is fun to look through, and we can do another round of this. We'll see what the audience says about it. And thanks for doing the summary of these. It's so hard to because there's no way you do justice to any one of these artists by like doing an audio version of narration, but I think it helps.
Absolutely, and we've left out so many great artists that. you know, probably should be on this list as well. But, you know, at least we won't be, when we're talking about this, we can say, you know, go listen to that other episode. We did talk about this one, artist one time.
All right, Andrew, thanks. This has been an episode of the AAA NFT podcast, all about affordable NFTs. The episode notes and resources may be found at 3ANFT.com in our show notes. Again, 3ANFT.com. And that reminder, don't bet what you can't afford to lose. Remember, we are not financial advisors and nothing in this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Thanks for joining us. Hope you learned something.